Wancho Man out here clowning.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. We are back with another season preview podcast today. This is actually the fourth podcast that I'm recording for today, so you've had tons of content to churn through. We're going to be heading to the Western Conference for this show, and we're going to be looking at a team that is just dripping with real-life entertainment and fantasy goodness, and that is the Denver Nuggets. And to talk about the Denver Nuggets, an up-and-coming team with lots of interest, I am joined by the host of the Locked On Nuggets podcast, and that is Adam Marius. Adam, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
I've been really looking forward to doing this Nuggets preview because this is a team that is just chock full of some of my favorite players in the NBA, players that have got tons of fantasy value as well. They're super fun to watch on the court. So I'm going to be probably sporting a permanent smile for the majority of the time as we talk about these Nuggets players. And we start off these shows by talking about the players that the team has acquired. And a pretty big fish was reeled in by the Denver front office in the offseason, and that is, of course, Paul Millsap, who automatically slots himself in as the starting power forward for this team. Millsap had a decline last season. There's two ways of looking at that. It's one, it's playing with Dwight Howard, or two, is the fact that he's 32 years of age already. So that is two of those things. Which one do you think was the biggest factor in Millsap's decline? And if it was just the Dwight Howard thing, are you expecting a bit of a bounce back in his numbers? Not that he wasn't good last year, but he just wasn't at the level he was the year before.
Right. So I think it's both. I think both things played a factor into it. But you asked what was the larger one, and I think it was unquestionably the Dwight Howard, not just playing alongside Dwight Howard, who I think changes things. Anytime you have a big who's effective almost exclusively in the restricted area, that just clutters things up and it makes things difficult. But it wasn't just that. It was also that Millsap was sort of, he had been on a very balanced team in Atlanta for quite a while. And last year he was asked to do even more of the scoring load than previous years. I think he took the most field goal attempts of his career last season. So I just think it was a combination of a little bit about him getting older, although I don't think that much. A lot about playing with Dwight and a lot about just being asked to do maybe more than he's even capable of, quite frankly, in terms of just kind of shouldering the scoring and playmaking load.
People looked at his numbers last season, and you can see significant declines in certain areas, like the field goal percentage, as you mentioned. He took those more shots, but he was also more of a focal point, so that's understandable. But it was a 3% drop in his field goal percentage. But the one that people look at the most, they look at the block numbers, which went from 1.7 to 0.9. And while that is a factor of playing with Dwight Howard, Paul Millsap, before the 2015-16 season, had never been a guy that was getting anywhere near 1.5 blocks per game. So I don't expect that to really jump back up. Not that Nikola Jokic is a great rim protector, but I'm not expecting Millsap to go back to 1.7 blocks per game. But I think he's going to be fairly solid compared to where he was last year, maybe increase his efficiency numbers and be a guy that is more of a sort of third round, fourth round fantasy guy. Now, people remember back in 15-16 where he was a comfortable top 20 guy for three or four seasons in a row. I don't think he's getting back to that, but there will be some changes in his game. How do you think he actually meshes alongside Jokic?
I think he's going to mesh really, really nicely. And part of this is, as you know, everybody meshes well with Nikola Jokic. Everybody's numbers, especially their efficiency numbers, really just jump off the charts when he's on the floor because the Nuggets offense really hums. I think he's a player that's going to defer to Jokic. And the more players the Nuggets put on the roster that defer to Jokic, I think the better they are because he's not a selfish player. He's a very smart player. And if you kind of cede decision-making to him, I think then you're going to have an offense that makes good decisions. So I think the thing I think about Paul Millsap statistically next year is, some of his scoring numbers might go down a little bit. There's a lot of good rebounders on the Nuggets roster too, so I wouldn't be surprised if his individual, rebound numbers went down. But I think his efficiency numbers are going to go through the roof, and I actually wouldn't be surprised if his block and steal numbers are a little bit on the high side for his, just looking at his career average. Not that I think he's going to become this great shot blocker or anything like that. I think 1.7 is his career high that he had 2 years ago. I don't think he's going to have that. But I wouldn't be surprised if he was in the 1.2, 1.3 range just because he's going to be able to focus so much on the defensive end of the court And you know, I think the offensive side of the game is going to come very, very easily to him next year.
Yeah, I think that that's a good point. I do have his blocks increasing this season, nowhere near to the 1.7, but a slight increase. The other thing I think that he won't also play, he played 34 minutes a game last year when he'd been at the 33-32 prior to that. And I think with the Nuggets' depth, especially in that front court, he won't need to play 34 minutes a night this year. So I'd expect that to come back a minute, maybe a minute and a half this season as well. So that's something to bear in mind. But he's a strong candidate, a solid guy to have a look at in those in that third round or fourth round, especially with big men becoming hard to find in that area. And while I think his minutes will come back, he's not playing 27 a night. He's not getting cut in half or anything like that. He's still going to be playing the bulk of those minutes at power forward next to Jokic. And people have had concerns, but Millsap's going to come in, it's going to impact what Jokic does, it's going to impact his usage. Like, it's not. Jokic is the man. He is the number one guy. They lost Dylan Gallinari. Like, Millsap comes in and takes Gallinari's usage, but less of it. So it's not like...
Right.
It's not like that they've just added this extra all-star that they've got to try and fit in. It's not a Kevin Durant going to the Golden State Warriors and who loses their shots. It's Millsap replaces Gallinari, and then there's more shots to go around for other people. So it doesn't faze me in that sense. He fits as a perfect complement defensively for Jokic, and we'll talk about Jokic a fair bit later on. But I'm interested in Millsap. I think he does have a bounce back, but not back to that top 20 level. The other guy they brought in was a draft night trade, and this was a weird one to me, trading out of that 13th pick, and they got Trey Lyles and pick 24 back for it. Lyles was poor for the majority of last season. Now he joins a front court which is extremely crowded with Paul Millsap, with Kenneth Faried, with Darrell Arthur, all there at the power forward spot. I assume that we're not going to see Lyles in the rotation on an every night basis this season, Adam.
I don't think we will. The power forward position is such a mystery for this team going into it. Obviously not the starting, that's Paul Millsap's job, but there's a lot of players in line that I think all are very intriguing, but obviously they can't all play. I think Juancho Hernangómez is going to primarily play small forward this year, which is unfortunate because I really love him at the power forward spot. But he's the most likely candidate to play small forward minutes, and I think they're going to invest a lot of time into him this season. Kenneth Faried, I expected him to be traded in the offseason. I've been expecting him to be traded for over a year now, but he keeps coming back to the roster. So, you know, if I would be surprised if Faried was back on the roster, but if he is, he eats up the backup power forward minutes. I just don't see how any of the other players are going to outperform him. And if that's the case, then you're talking about small ball lineups that maybe feature Wilson and Juancho at the same time, Plumlee occasionally playing the power forward position. So where does Lyles fit into that? He's buried behind a lot of, I just think, more likely players to get those minutes. But I am intrigued by him. There will be nights this season, you know, in more of a DFS type situation where, you know, maybe that they're down a guy or two, that I think Lyles will step in. And I'm very intrigued to see how he does, because his skill set, once again, I think he has a very interesting skill set, that he was in a really tough situation last year with just more, you know, he's kind of a multi-tool, and there were very specific options on the Utah roster. Joe Johnson as your stretch four, Boris Diaw as your playmaker, Derek Favors as your big. So I think there'll be nights where Lyles actually steps in and plays pretty well, but I don't think it'll be very consistent at all.
He last season he had the opportunity early in the season when Favors was out. It was him and Boris Diaw that were playing the four, and he had opportunities and he struggled significantly, and so much so that Quinn Snyder lost a lot of faith in him, and he was taken out of the rotation. But his rookie season was really encouraging. We thought, maybe he can develop his three-point shot. He can do some stuff defensively. He can score a bit. He can rebound. But, yeah, it is going to be a tough slog, at least at this point, while Arthur and Faried are still on the roster. And as you said, Juancho's best position is going to be at the four, I believe, as well, down the track. The other guy they brought in was Torrey Craig on a two-way deal. He'd been playing here in Australia. He won the... most improved player and defensive player of the year last year. He did fairly well in summer league, but on a two-way deal, we're just not going to see. I'm not going to see Torrey Craig do a huge amount. The guys they lost, the Rooster, Dylan Gallinari goes to the Clippers. Go ahead.
I'm going to interrupt you there for a little bit. This is my boldest take of the year. I think Torrey Craig is a guy. Obviously, it's something that would take, I think, weeks to develop. He's a guy that I think fits the roster actually really, really, really well. And Wilson Chandler obviously has had injury history. I don't expect him to play more than 55, 60 games. I think there's going to be opportunity for Torrey Craig. And you look at this lineup. They had phenomenal offense, really struggled on defense. Everybody on the roster looks great on offense playing with Jokic. What you have to do is you have to be able to knock down wide open perimeter shots. You've got to be able to cut, and you've got to stay in your lane. From what I've seen of Torrey Craig, and perhaps you know a little bit more intimately from, you know, obviously him playing professionally down in Australia, he seems like the kind of guy that's going to be very fine with the role of just stay in your lane and go all out on the defensive end. I really liked what I saw from him from Summer League, and I'm intrigued. I know he's on a two-way. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up playing, you know, quite a bit when he is, you know, on the roster and on the bench. I wouldn't be surprised if he worked his way into the rotation.
He was a 40% three-point shooter down here last year as well, like efficient from the field. He was, you know, quite good defensively. Obviously, he won Defensive Player of the Year. To me, he almost fits into that like Alonzo G sort of role that G has played over the past couple of years, that sort of backup wing defender type of guy. And yeah, I could see them upgrading his contract to a full-time roster spot deal at some point during the season if slots open up, because they need his size at the wing, because it's not like we can... Yeah, Will Barton's probably not big enough at times to play at the three, and if Wancho struggles at all guarding threes, yeah, there could be that role for him there. The other guy that said Gallinari's gone to the Clippers, Roy Hibbert is out of the league, and Mike Miller has moved his way into retirement. The NBA draft, I don't think that people were overly enthused with this draft from the Nuggets. Tyler Lydon in the first round, and then Monty Morris and Vlatko Kanchar in the second round. Let's start with Lydon. Did you dislike this pick as much as I imagined you did at the time?
Absolutely. I don't understand it. To this day, I don't. I think it was a really bad night for the Nuggets. And Tyler Lydon, again, the Nuggets traded for a power forward, drafted a power forward, and then got a trade for a power forward this year, all while having Juancho Hernangómez, who I thought was going to get a lot of power forward minutes this year. So it doesn't make any sense to me. Watching him at Summer League, you know, he looked really bad. He looked like perhaps the worst of the first round rookies. Only took, I think, 20 shots in you know, over 100 minutes. I just could not get a shot off. He was very hesitant. But it's Summer League, and the Nuggets had a weird roster with not a lot of playmakers. I think if he plays with Jokic, he'll get open shots, and his reputation is that he'll knock those down. But yes, I don't understand where he fits on this roster. I don't understand where he's going to get minutes. I don't think he's going to play very much at all. And it's going to be very tough for him to kind of work his way, not just into the rotation this year, but kind of to hang around the team. I just don't see where he fits presently or in the future.
He feels like he is a candidate to have like a rookie option declined at some point. That's just very early on. It's probably a bit unfair to the kid, but it just feels like he could be that guy that after the end of his third year, it's just he gets James Young and he's basically just out. I think that's a realistic proposition, but you know, who knows how things develop. He also is going to have a level of adjustment coming from playing zone defense in college to try and, you know, adjust to NBA defenses. He did have some decent defensive stats in college, but we need to see how that all that translates, and he does not have great fantasy upside. He's not going to play hardly at all this season. But one guy who does have, you know, on a per-minute type basis, good fantasy numbers is Monte Morris, who was the second-round point guard they selected. He is on a two-way, so we're not going to see much of him, but he is one of the best guys in the NCAA. I think he might have even been number one in assist-to-turnover ratio. He just doesn't turn the ball over. He generates assists. He generates looks for other people. He's a good three-point shooter. And even though the Nuggets do have a fair array of point guards on the roster at the moment, I like that pick of Morris. And if any way he moves into a backup role in the next 3 to 4 years, he would have, you know, some deeper league fantasy appeal just because of that assist-to-turnover ratio.
Yeah, I agree with you. He was, of the three players the Nuggets took, I think he's the one I'm most interested in. Obviously, a 51st pick is not something, you know, a type of player you really expect to pan out. He's really undersized. Even standing next to him, he just looks too small, quite frankly, to play NBA basketball. But he is, I think he actually has the best assist to turnover ratio in NCAA history as far as they over for career. So he really is impressive in that regard. He runs a team really well. But as you mentioned, Jamal Murray, Jameer Nelson, Emmanuel Mudiay ahead of him. I don't know if the Nuggets are really willing to invest too much time into a guy playing actual NBA minutes at the point guard spot when they have two guys so young already there.
A couple of injuries really plague this team in the front court. So we talk about them bringing in all these power forwards, but they had a couple of significant injuries last season. Darrell Arthur and his knees, and Kenneth Faried had back issues. Arthur's knee, to me, from I guess from the outside, it just feels like it's never going to get better, and he's just constantly going to be battling this this knee problem. Do you think that that's a fair representation of where he's at with his health?
Yeah, I think he'll play more than he did last year, or he'll be at least available to play more. I'm not very high on him just as a on his talent, quite frankly. He has a weird skill set where he shoots the three really well. He's not very athletic at all. He's kind of a good individual defender, but he's not a rim protecting defender. I think it's a combination of, you know, the injuries have sapped away a little bit of what made him so effective, and now he's kind of this in between player. But I'm with you. He's another guy that I think he's a phenomenal leader and locker room guy, and I think the Nuggets are going to keep him around just for that, but I don't expect him to have much of an impact, and I don't expect him to play every night, quite frankly.
Yeah, neither do I. I can't see him in the every night rotation. But what about Fareed, who I thought they misused him at times last year when they had multiple centers on the roster, them giving you 5 to 10 minutes of night of Kenneth Fareed at center never seemed to make much sense. He's a really below average defender, rim protector. He rebounds well. He has no stretch ability, and he's been sort of found out the last couple of years. We keep hearing about trade talks, but it feels like no one wants to take him on, and he seems to be consistently plagued with back and neck issues throughout his last couple of seasons. Is that all cleared up now? Is he ready to go for camp, or is that just something that is just going to be a persistent problem for Ken?
I think he's ready and clear to go for camp is the latest that I've heard on him. He has had been banged up a little bit, although I think some of it also kind of coincides with the Nuggets, at least 2 years ago.
Yep.
They shut him down early because of tanking. You know, it was one of those, oh, his back is tight, so we're going to hold him out the last 10 games of the year kind of thing. But, the thing about Fareed is, I wrote about this a lot on DenverStiffs.com. Jokic and Fareed were the best two-man pair on the Nuggets roster, and it kind of makes sense. Fareed is this super athlete. He's got this great above-the-rim gravity where you can't really help off of him because you just throw a lob or he grabs the offensive rebound. And Jokic is this great playmaker with no athleticism. They really were kind of a yin and yang type thing where they balanced each other out very well on the court. Now Millsap will clearly start. I think Fareed would be an excellent option if you could somehow pair Jokic and Fareed, you know, for 15 minutes a night, or somehow stagger the lineup so that they're playing a lot. But I think he's a horrible combination next to Plumlee and Emmanuel Mudiay. And right now, I would not be surprised if those guys played a lot of minutes together, at least right out the gate. And I just think that's a bad. So I say all that to say that Fareed can be one of these guys that playing next to Jokic, he looks like he did back in 2013, where he's only expected to do the things he's really great at, and he looks great. Or he could be playing with Plumlee and Mudiay, where there's no spacing, and all of a sudden, not just he looks terrible, but everybody on the court looks terrible. I think he's a very, very tough puzzle piece to kind of build around and to fit around, and the Nuggets have some lineups that'll work and some that don't. So I don't know what to make of him, and I'm surprised he's still here.
I think his minutes are going to take a hit this year, but he's getting drafted. I don't know why he's getting drafted in fantasy leagues. 139 on Yahoo, 140 on ESPN. There's absolutely no way that he can achieve that level unless Paul Millsap suffers some sort of knock on wood season ending injury. There's just no chance of Fareed is getting anywhere near that sort of value. So I think that might be just a couple of people just chucking in a name value or a name brand sort of guy that, hey, I remember Kenneth Fareed. He used to be good, and he's just not going to get to that level. But you're right. The pairing with Jokic, we saw plenty of, you know, Jokic highlights assists, which were going towards Fareed, you know, no look passes and alley oops and all that sort of stuff. And they did work well together, but that's not an uncommon thing. Unless your name is Yusuf Nurkic, everyone works well playing alongside Nikola Jokic. Let's talk about Jokic now. And you mentioned about athleticism. Would you say that you have a higher vertical leap than Jokic?
I probably do, honestly. But it doesn't seem to bother him much. He knows how to use it.
Exactly. It doesn't matter. And people, and this is, and I'm sure you hear this all the time. It's been flying back and forth on Twitter over the last 4 or 5 days about how good Jokic is, and he's terrible at defense. He's unathletic. That's cool. He's not terrible at defense. I'm sure you're aware of that. He is not elite at defense, but he is good. He's maybe above average. And the athleticism, who cares if you're not athletically, you know, jumping above the rim when every one of your passes allows every other teammate to get to that zone? Like, how good can this guy be? I think one of the biggest things holding him back is those absolutely idiotic fouls that he used to commit last year when he'd miss a shot and the other team would rebound it and he'd just try to, you know, slap him on the ass as they went past and then he'd get a foul. If he cuts that he's got to play more minutes.
I think it's really all it comes down to. 27.9 minutes last season. It's just, it's crazy to think of this guy. And you know this. I have to give this caveat to your listeners if they're unfamiliar with my work. I'm maybe Nikola Jokic's biggest fan and his biggest believer, and have been from the very start. So I know a lot of people see that as a bias. I personally think I know that there's a lot of people on the bandwagon. I still don't think people realize just how great this guy is, and I think he's going to have a phenomenal year. Not, you know, you look at the per 36 numbers, and I know everybody says you can't just extrapolate. I think you can with him. Yeah, I think he's going to play 34 minutes this year, and you can just take what numbers he had and add an extra 6 minutes onto that, and that's what he's going to do. The efficiency is off the charts, and it's not because, first of all, he has incredible touch that I just have never seen from a guy his size before, but he just has incredible decision-making. He doesn't take bad shots. It's very rare that you watch a Nikola Jokic game or even a possession and say, oh, what was he thinking there? He almost always makes the right read, and that alone ups his efficiency. And then you talk about the passing. His defense, I've said this, I thought his defense took a step back last year, and I think a lot of that, along with the fouling, had to do with his fatigue and just not being ready. You think about it, he wasn't expected to be the guy last year. He wasn't expected to be the number one guy. He kind of came into that role. He had a huge offensive burden, and I just don't think he was mentally or physically prepared for that role, and that's part of why his minutes were so limited. I think he is prepared for that now. The Nuggets have, you know, stressed quite a bit how much they've worked with him this summer to kind of let him know, like, hey, this is your team. Everything here, even Millsap, is coming in with the expectation that this is your team. You got to lead on both ends. I think his upside is a well above average defender. Not an elite. He's not going to be Rudy Gobert, you know, Joel Embiid, one of these guys that people are afraid to go in and challenge. But he just has great instincts. The same way he has great instincts on the offensive end, he has great instincts on the defensive end. He's got quick hands. He kind of knows the passing angles and anticipates what the offense is going to do before, so he's able to rack up, you know, steals. I think he's just going to have people are kind of expecting it. But I think he's going to even surprise the people expecting it this year. I think he's going to have a phenomenal year.
He's been on a solid off-season regimen of harness racing training over in Serbia, just sitting in the sulky, just driving the horses around, getting that part. But the minutes is key. Look, last year I said, you know, I'm probably going to fight you from you saying that you're the Jokic's biggest fan, because I want that title myself. I had him in my All Star team and All NBA teams last year. That's how big on him I was. But that obviously didn't come to fruition. If he's playing 33 minutes a night, forget it. He is a clear top 10 fantasy. He's already a top 10 fantasy guy, I think, anyway. But last year I said if he plays 32 minutes a night, he'll be a top 12 guy. He only played 27 and he was still the 20th ranked player. He's going to go through the roof. Elite field goal and free throw percentages. He's got triple one potential, 7 assists, 12 boards, 20 points. Like, he can do all of those. They sound outrageous to say someone's going to have 20, 12, and 7 as a center and shoot 56 and 82% with a steal and a block and a three. It just sounds outrageous, but it's what he can do. And to me, if you've got pick 9, it is the clear pick at pick number 9 to take Nikola Jokic in drafts. He is able to do so many different things. In fact, this is, Adam, I don't know how often you've ever listened to this podcast, but every time I want to talk about Nikola Jokic, this is what I play.
Pretty good. It's pretty, 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 pretty good.
He's getting past pretty good now. He is very good. He is excellent. And it just makes, and you must love this, it just makes his team the second most fun team to watch, maybe behind the Golden State Warriors, because every time he gets the ball, something stupid is happening. And all of his teammates know, and they all know where to go. And that just opens up everything. And you're right, he leads this team. He is this team. He is the franchise. He is everything. And he is going to take another step forward, and we hope that he just can stay on the court with those fouling issues. Now, the starting point guard job is a little bit more unclear. I feel like it's pretty clear, but it's not as set in stone as who's starting at center. Jamal Murray took over that job at the end of last season when Jameer Nelson was either hurt or they were, you know, pretending he was hurt. He played big minutes and he looked fantastic. So do you think that we go into this season with the blue arrow locked in as the starting point guard?
I don't think locked in, but I think that's the Nuggets' expectation. That's their hope. And I think it's his job to lose. So if everybody came into the camp and played the exact same, you know, quality, it's Jamal Murray's job. I think he's a phenomenal player. And I think they like his attitude, his toughness, his focus, his work ethic, all of those things. And, you know, the question is he a point guard? And this has been the question now for 2 years. It was, you know, back in at Kentucky, he wasn't necessarily a point guard either with Tyler Ulis there. Last year, only six games, I believe, he started at the point guard spot. So you're talking about a team with playoff hopes, and he's really only played a handful of minutes as the true point guard. The question is, how much point guard, you know, traditional point guarding skills does he need with Jokic on the roster and Millsap, guys that are capable of kind of taking over some of those duties? I think Will Barton as well. So I expect Jamal Murray to win that spot. But I don't think it's going to be necessarily, you know, he's not going to be a Chris Paul type. I think it's going to be a bit of a hybrid role where he has very narrow point guard responsibilities, like bringing the ball up, maybe settling things down if there's two or three possessions in a row that get out of hand.
He's going to be, I think you want to equate him to, say, what Malcolm Brogdon was able to do is his role as the starting point guard for the Bucks last year. Like Giannis handled the ball majority of the time. Chris Middleton handles the ball. But Brogdon's the point guard, and that's similar to what Murray's going to be. He's getting drafted at 135 on Yahoo, which is bananas. There is no way that you want to take him, or you want to let him slide that far. I think that he's got top 60 upside for this season. Probably, if I'm going to be conservative, I've got him at top 75, and that's just depending on how the minutes play out for him. But I'm really interested in him. Again, he, as you said, he doesn't need to be Chris Paul and dictating everything. You know, Jokic is running things. So he plays off that. He gets his five assists. He might score 15 points and hit two threes and get to the line a little bit more. He can do a little bit defensively. He's not as bad as what it's maybe made out that he is. He has his moments, but he can improve there and get some steals. So I'm really interested in what Murray can do.
And he's actually got a little bit of Gary Harris's game in him. Like, Gary Harris is the perfect complement to Jokic because he's such a great cutter. Just Dwayne Wade level feel for when to cut, the timing, and all of these things. I think Jamal Murray kind of has this too. He really developed a chemistry with Jokic last year, and I'm excited for the two of them to play more minutes together because I think that Murray and Harris and Jokic, that trio is just going to be so many cuts and so much shooting and spacing and that I really think it's going to work out. So I'm high on Jamal Murray's upside as a basketball player. I do think the point guarding stuff, you know, I'm curious to see how he handles it. But just from a fantasy perspective, I think he's going to get a lot of shots. And then he shot 33.4% last year from three. I watch this guy, you know, like I watch everybody in warmups and practices and all this stuff. The guy is one of the best shooters, you know, that I've seen come through Denver in a long time. It didn't work out for him as a lot of rookies struggle. I think his three-point percentage is going to be up in the 37, 38, 39 range this year.
Yeah, definitely think that's a possibility. Also, just a quick shout-out to Jamal Murray. Someone asked me a question on Twitter maybe 5 days ago. They said, who would you prefer to draft, Jamal Murray or Gary Harris? And I replied, oh, probably Harris, to which Jamal Murray then replied back to that. Obviously sitting at home searching up his name on Twitter. He wasn't tagged in this. He just replied back to that, take both. I went, all right, cool. I can't argue with that, Jamal. We'll have both you and we'll have both you and Gary onto our teams. Do you think that Emmanuel Mudiay, who was the starter, was taken out of the rotation, then sort of moved back in? And I thought people, this probably flies under the radar. He was he looked a lot better in that second half of the season after he was demoted. Is he come in as the backup, and Jameer Nelson is an in case of emergency point guard, or where is Mudiay fitting at the moment?
I think that the Nuggets, again, would love for that to be the case. I think they're pulling for that. I think they, like me, and especially when I say they, I think mostly Malone. He's the one that's you know, going to make these decisions. I think Malone, like myself, has kind of lost a little bit of faith in him. It's been 2 years. There wasn't a lot of progress. Now, I'm going to say that to say that if I were a betting man, I would bet against Emmanuel Mudiay having this, like, bounce back. It's not really bounce back, but you know, a breakout year where he kind of gets over the hump. I would bet against it. But I will say there are signs that this could be the case. And one of them is Emmanuel Mudiay played so many minutes with Kenneth Freed and Yusef Nurkic. And you alluded to this earlier with Dwight Howard and comparing Nurkic and Jokic and some of the cluttered lineups. Nurkic and Freed together just clogged the lane. It killed the offense. And for whatever reason, Mudiay played one third of his minutes of last season. One third of all the minutes he played were with Farid and Nurkic. So you think about what a bad year he had, and then you think one third of those minutes he was kind of doomed, in my opinion, doomed to fail. There was no succeeding in that lineup. So I do think he's a little bit better than what his numbers and even some of the eye tests have shown. The problem is it's taken 2 years to get to this point. How long of a leash does he have? If he comes into camp and isn't looking great, you know, if he's the first 2-3 weeks of the season, he's not looking any better. Do the Nuggets just go to Jameer Nelson and say, you know what, we know what we get with him? I think they probably will. That's why I think this is going to be a very important next 5-6 weeks for Mudiay. And again, I would bet against it, but I'm pulling for him.
it's only 11 games, but after the All-Star break, he played 15 minutes a game in those 11 games. And per 36, he averaged 18, 5, and 7 with 1.5 threes and a steal. And he shot 44% from the field. He shot 84% from the line. And he shot 39% from three. Now, they just look extraordinary compared to the other shooting numbers he's put up throughout his career. Now, it is an 11-game sample size, but that's what I said. When he came back and was back into the rotation, he looked different. And some of that is those lineups and playing with different players who enable him to create more space. We saw him have that one of the weirdest games of the season, that early in the year against Boston, where I think he had like, 18 points in a quarter or something out of control.
I think 24.
Yeah,
24-point quarter in first quarter in Boston. I think he finished with 26.
That was that game where you had to just turn it on because Emmanuel Mudiay just wasn't missing. It was really, really weird. But he showed a significant improvement over the second half of the season in those 11 games post-All-Star break that made you go, all right, well, the shooting isn't a total write-off. There is room for improvement here, but he's got to be able to string that together over an entire season. So there is some faith there.
I think he's a good catch-and-shoot three-point shooter. Okay. His catch-and-shoot three-point shot looks all right. The problem is he takes so many pull-up mid-rangers and fadeaways and pull-up threes, like an abnormally high amount of those. And I think a lot of that was those clogged lineups where, 10, 15 seconds into the shot clock, there was nothing going on, and he just thought, okay, I got to make something. I will say this, though. That starting lineup, I don't know that he's going to win the starting lineup minutes. I think it would take he would have to really outplay Jamal Murray for that to happen. I mean, really outplay him, which means he's probably aiming at this moment for the backup minutes. And you look at who's in line to play backup minutes at the center, probably Plumlee, who can't shoot outside of the restricted area, Fareed, who can't shoot outside of the restricted area. He might be set up for failure again, unfortunately. Now, I do think the Nuggets can stagger lineups so that he's playing with, Millsap at center, or maybe Wilson and Wancho, or there are lineups, second unit lineups that will work for him. But I'm just worried that things are kind of barreling towards Mudiay, Plumlee, Fareed second unit, and that would be, I think, a disaster.
Let's talk about Gary Harris.
Nice, Gary!
Let's do it.
He is extraordinarily underrated. There is very few shooting guards who are as efficient as what Harris is. We're talking about plus 60% true shooting guy who is in line to really up his numbers again this year. He averaged, if I get my numbers up here, he averaged 15 points per game last year on 50% shooting. Like that's crazy. He almost had three assists, almost two threes, 1.2 steals per game. And there is no one taking those minutes. And this is a season where his season was interrupted by injury. Like, people forget that the start of the year, he was in and out of the lineups. Down the stretch, he was playing 34, 35 minutes a night and absolutely crushing it as a top 35 fantasy guy. He is going to be getting these minutes. He is a key part. He's in his fourth year, restricted free agent after this season, looking to convert his career into a big money contract, which we feel pretty confident about that happening. He's an extraordinary fantasy steal. He's getting drafted outside the top 100 when he is probably a top 50 player for this season. Am I being too optimistic about Harris? Because as you said, him and Jokic together, you can talk about Jokic and Free, but Harris and Jokic, it's like there's telepathy going on. Jokic doesn't need to look, and he knows where Harris is. The timing of his cuts is fantastic, and that's why his efficiency is so good, because he gets to the right spots. He hits the threes, he hits the dunks, the layups, everything. He just feels perfect for what this team needs.
There are three guys on this roster that I'm just so, incredibly high on, and it's Nikola Jokic, Juancho Hernangómez, and Gary Harris. And the thing that those three have in common is, a little bit less so with Jokic because he doesn't really have a lane, he has everything, but Gary Harris and Juancho just stay in their lane. And it's incredible how efficient you can be when you just cut out the bad shots, the bad turnovers, all the bad stuff. You rarely watch Gary Harris and think, oh man, he's really forcing it right now, because he never is. He just, if he has an open three-pointer, he takes it. He knows how to get open off ball so that he can find spots. And then he just has the perfect, honestly, he's got to be a top five perimeter cutter, from the point guard or shooting guard spot, at just knowing, finding the seams and the timing and all of it. So I really, really, really like Gary Harris. Now, I will say, the Nuggets have tried to trade him in the offseason for some high-profile deals. And I think Gary Harris is going to be best here in Denver. I think that's true of a lot of guys offensively because, it's what Jokic does. But I think Gary Harris might be overvalued in a vacuum as a player, because he is such a perfect complement to Jokic. And Jokic is maybe even overvalued because Harris is such a complement to him. But I do think, you know, I don't think the Nuggets are going to trade him in season. I think they tried to do that in the offseason, and now they're very happy to kind of move forward. But that would be the only thing I would say about him, is I think he is very dependent on Jokic because he is more of an off-ball player than a creator. And then lastly, the other thing I'll say about him is, if you look at his assist numbers that last month of the season, they really went up. I'm very curious. I never thought of him as a playmaker. I always thought of him as a finisher, you know, shooting finisher or cutting and dunking finisher. He started adding a little bit of where he'd catch it on the dribble handoff and then, you know, one or two dribbles and make a pass, make a move. I'm curious to see if he's added that. I don't expect it. I really don't. But if he has, then he definitely vaults himself into this whole other category of shooting guard. If he's able to add that playmaking and maybe get up to like 4 or 5 assists a game. I don't expect it, but it would really raise his profile.
Yeah, look, he did show that, and that was part of that increase in value he had after the All-Star break, is he started doing that. I think he can rise his assist numbers up. I'm super excited to see what he does this year. The other guy that we've mentioned plenty of times is Juancho Hernan Gomez. We are both really in on Juancho. I remember putting up a poll maybe March last year, you know, who's the better Hernan Gomez brother? And Billy won it by like 75% to 25%. I went, cool. Like this is going to be proven incorrect, in my opinion, in a year or so. I'm massive onto Juancho. Good rebounder. He was able to play as a rookie out of position, start at small forward, play on Kevin Durant, and hold his own, like not get embarrassed, which for a guy who's playing out of position as a rookie was phenomenal to me. He hits threes, he grabs rebounds, he plays defense. I'm super pumped for him. And when Millsap pushes from the age of 33 to 35 or 36, I think that just is perfect for the timing of Juancho to step in. At, you know, he'll be 22 or 23 at that stage and go, cool, well, here we are. And it's me and Jokic just manning this front court for the next 10 years.
I'm right there with you. I'm so high on this guy, and it's a little bit unwarranted. I think for Gary and Nikola, I think it's validated. I think those two guys are proven how great they are. Juancho hasn't quite yet because he just hasn't had the minute total to do it. But the style that he plays, it's not that it's rare. It's a little bit rare because he's not a guy that forces shots. I just went through his synergy numbers. He had zero isolation plays. I think he had 8 post ups. Everything else was assisted type plays, handoffs, spot ups, cuts, offensive putbacks. You know, he's another guy that just stays in his lane. He's a phenomenal shooter, 40.7% from 3 last year. And that included, I think down the stretch, he was like 2 for 20 to finish the year, something horrible. So I think he's a guy that I just think is going to fit in really well. And the best game of the season last year for the Nuggets was a game in which all of the veterans were out for injury or illness. Juancho stepped. It was against the Warriors in Denver. Juancho stepped into the starting lineup, and I think he had 4 or 5 three-pointers, like 20-something points. He's a guy that I don't think – it was a little bit of a fluke because he was just on fire, but I don't think it was a fluke in that the offense was humming and in such a groove, and that's because you surround Nikola Jokic with Paul Millsap, Gary Harris, Juancho Hernan Gomez, Jamal Murray. These guys are all guys that just don't press. Jamal Murray maybe a little bit tries to create – but the rest of them just work the ball around until you find something. And if you're playing with Jokic, you're going to find something. And that's why I'm so high on him as a fit. I don't even think the Nuggets think it so far. Otherwise, I think they would have thinned the roster a little bit and tried to open up minutes for him. But I think once he gets opportunities to play with Jokic specifically, he's going to be another guy that fits. My Locked On Nuggets podcast that I recorded last night, or actually today, I said that I think Juancho can be the Gary Harris of the forward position. And I mean just that, a guy that stays in his lane, cuts perfectly, rebounds really, really well, and shoots lights out when he's wide open, which will be quite often.
Do you think that Juancho gets 20-plus minutes a night backing up the 3 and the 4 this year?
No, I don't. And that's the biggest problem, I think, with the Nuggets roster is just that there's so much congestion. And you look at it, Wilson's going to probably play somewhere around 30 minutes a night. I think Will Barton will slide over to the 3 for a spot minutes here or there. And I just don't know that there's going to be enough minutes for Juancho. I don't think he'll play very much power forward at all. So I think he'll be the guy that kind of gets squeezed out a little bit. So 15 minutes a night is probably what I expect from him.
Do you think if Chandler, who's had this hip problem that cost him the whole of the 2015-16 season, do you think that if Chandler A, either gets traded or if he gets hurt, that Juancho would move in and start at the 3 this season?
I do. And this is another one where I think Torrey Craig could probably come in and do that, because, again, if you look at the starting lineup, they're going to score.
Yep.
You need some defense. And Wancho, I'm very high on his offense. His defense is much more of a question mark. That'll kind of determine his upside as a player throughout his career. But I think, Torrey Craig might even be a guy that they start. And Wancho's minutes would go up. He would end up playing 25 minutes a night. But they might just go with more of a defensive starting lineup there. But I do think if Wilson got hurt, Wancho would be playing starter type minutes.
So Wancho's obviously a guy that we're really high on. I really like him for dynasty leagues. You're probably not going to be using him in many standard leagues for this season. Wilson Chandler, he's going to start. Yeah, he's a guy that I don't think has got a tremendous amount of upside. You have to pick him around pick 100, and that's totally fine there. But I just don't know if he's got the upside to really push further than that. He does have those injury concerns that we do need to watch out for. And he's always a candidate to get traded. He hasn't seemed like he's been the happiest guy in Denver recently. So we'll see how that all pans out. But he's going to be solid. He's going to do what he does, but without a significant amount of upside. Now, Adam, Plumlee's contract. Like Nikola Mirotic, like Jermichael Green, like Alex Len, he's a restricted free agent, big man, who has no deal. We're under the impression that he'll just be back in Denver, but is there any progress being made on any deal here?
I haven't heard anything. Been radio silence on him. I think if you look at the landscape, this was an interesting offseason for centers, for the center position, especially guys like him. His stock just, I think it's got to be tough for him because his stock has fallen so far in the last, one calendar year from the end of last season to where he is now. I think with Nerlens Noel, taking the qualifying offer, there's a lot of centers next year available. I don't think he's going to get a big deal next year. So now the question is, does he sign a qualifying offer and play for cheap this year and then test unrestricted free agency next year? Or does he try to lock up 3 or 4 years at kind of a disappointing deal? I'm sure disappointing to him, below $10 million a year type value, which is, I think, what he would fetch right now. The Nuggets don't seem too concerned with it, which makes me think they probably have something worked out, but we're all kind of just sitting here and waiting for it. I wouldn't be surprised if they signed him to a longer term deal, and I wouldn't be surprised if Kenneth Freed was moved, quite frankly. Those are two things that I think are actually entirely possible still.
He's going to be disappointed because he's going to end up getting less money than his brother, and in any situation that is just a baffling outcome that he is going to be paid less than Miles Plumlee, but that's what's going to happen. Now, Malik Beasley, he struggled to crack the rotation last year. There was just too many players, but I thought he looked sensational in summer league. Is there a chance that he can be a regular member of the rotation this year, or is it just still too many bodies around?
I think there's too many bodies. And I'm also, a lot of people are really high on Malik, which I find interesting. Low on him.
Okay.
I'm pretty low, curiously enough. And a lot of smart people, I mean, Mike Miller and know the Nuggets front office really believes in him. I just don't see it. He's kind of a ball in the hand type playmaker, and obviously the Nuggets don't need that on the roster. I don't think he's good enough of a scorer to kind of take on that maybe six man type role where he's a instant offense off the bench. I just don't know that he's quite good enough for that. And he hasn't developed, especially last year, hardly playing any minutes. He didn't get a great chance to kind of work on his off-ball game. So I'm not very high on him, but also if you just look at the numbers, we're already talking about guys like Jameer Nelson who aren't going to play very much. Wancho, at the small forward. So I don't know where Malik fits in. I just think he's buried too far in the depth chart, and this year might go a little too similar to last year for him, for his liking.
I think it's going to take a trade of maybe Will Barton for him to really start to push into that regular. He'd have to show a little bit at the start of the season, but yeah, I agree. He's not going to be an every night contributor for this team. Now, who would you have as your breakout candidate on this team, Adam? You can use whatever criteria you want to decide on breakout, but who's the breakout guy?
I think the obvious one has got to be Jamal Murray, who I don't know if it's a breakout when you're talking about a second-year player, because rookies struggle, especially rookie point guards or backcourt players struggle. I think he's just going to have a good year. I really believe in him. It's funny. I'm watching Drew Hanlon's video. Drew Hanlon trains player, professional player trainer, who's worked with a lot of different really top-end NBA talent, and he's talking about Joel Embiid and how Joel is one of these guys that really focuses on every part of a post move. While Drew Hanlon's showing a new post move to him, he'll kind of he'll circle. He wants to see the post move from 360 degrees because he really is paying attention to every detail. And I know that not every player is that way. Jamal Murray is that way. He's a guy that's obsessive about the details of basketball. And I just love watching guys like that work out. I love watching Jamal Murray go through a shooting routine or working on a new move where he'll just do the same move 100 times in a row at 50% speed just because he's trying to get the footwork down. I believe in him. That's a Kobe Bryant type mentality type thing. And I think Jamal Murray is very similar in that regard. I think he's going to make a huge leap this year. I think he's going to make a huge leap the following year too. It's going to be a kind of a 2 or 3 year where he makes, you know, really big improvements, but I think it'll start this year. We already saw flashes last season. He had so many open looks that just didn't go in throughout the season. And you could tell it bugged him because I know for a fact, this guy is a great shooter. I think this year, a lot of those shots go in. And he's a guy that could score 40 points, you know, maybe once or twice this season if he really gets hot and gets going. He's that guy that got that kind of talent. So he would be my candidate.
Yeah, he'd be mine as well. And once he does break out, you can credit me with providing him the motivation by saying that I would pick Gary Harris ahead of him. So that's why he's searching his name on Twitter. He's trying to find that motivation. So he's probably printed my tweet out. He's got it up in his locker, just looking at it. So that when he becomes a star this year, it's all because of me. So I'm looking forward to getting that credit in his MVP speech at some point or his Hall of Fame induction, Michael Jordan style. Now, if I want to look at the value fantasy guys in this team, I think Jokic going at pick 14 is banana. He's a top 10 guy. Harris outside the top 100, ridiculous. The Blue Arrow at 135, come on, that's silly. There's three value guys, and I could easily see myself having three Nuggets guys on my team with the value that those guys provide. But there are some guys who I think are a little bit overdrafted, and Mason Plumlee at 122 or 114 on ESPN.
Oof, no.
There's absolutely no chance. That is ludicrous. And Freed at 140, I just don't see any situation of him getting to that. The last thing before I get you out of here, Adam, is the Vegas over-under is a little bit aggressive compared to where we were last season. It's at 45.5 wins. Are you taking the over or the under?
If gun to my head, I would probably take the over. But I think at the moment I'm settled on 47 wins. Obviously, I reserve the right to change that after training camp, after I really get a look at this team. But I think 46, 47 wins. So you're not far off of that 45.5 number. I just think, again, this team last year, there was a couple players, you know, Nurkic very obviously, but I think Danilo Gallinari, obviously to another a smaller extent, they wanted this to be their team. And it clearly wasn't. This year coming in, the roster has, everybody knows the style that they're going to play. They know the pecking order on the team, which they didn't know last year, is a very clear pecking order, in my opinion. I think it's going to be a little bit smooth in that regard. And then again, I just believe in Nikola Jokic. I think he has a whole other level he can get to this season. So I think 46 or 47 wins is probably where I'm going
to
land.
So that'll put Denver in the playoffs, returning to postseason action, which is it's going to be fun for everyone. Adam, let us know where they can find you on Twitter and what's happening on Denver Stiffs and on Locked On Nuggets.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at @Adam_Mares, M-A-R-E-S. You can check out our work at Denver Stiffs. We have Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And we got, you know, this is obviously a worldwide show, but we have a surprising amount of Australian and New Zealand fans, Nuggets fans. I don't know how it happened, but I think like 1/10 of our readership at Denver Stiffs is from Australia, New Zealand, which is kind of remarkable, I think. So
it's because I'm driving the Jokic train down here, so it's just pushing it out.
There you go. Absolutely. So that's where you could find me. And then, of course, if you do want to listen more about the Nuggets, I do host the Locked On Nuggets podcast in the same network.
So go and listen to Locked On Nuggets and subscribe to both of our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. And if you could leave a review for both shows, 5 stars would be awesome. That would be fantastic to help the show get recognized more and get out there to more people. Adam, thank you for coming on and chatting about the Denver Nuggets with me.
Thanks for having me on.
We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Jamal Murray.